How are you all doing? Lots of rest, I'm sure. You'll pay for it, though. Well, before I begin this morning, I want to make a brief advertisement. As you've seen out there, Dr. Kevin Claussen has a table for Christ College, and I would encourage you that are thinking about going to college soon, or in the not-so-distant future, to stop by, check out some of the programs that we offer. We are retooling the program a bit. It's going to involve a heavy dose of ancient languages, and it's centered around philosophy and history and some literature and economics, political theory. And it's a modified Great Books program. And so we are going to be studying the classics, the canonical literature of the West, including John Calvin's Institutes. That's going to be the core of our theological education. So there's some new developments there. I'm there full-time now. Dr. Gentry is our research professor of theology, and I would encourage you to take a look. I know some of you have already made decisions. Some of you have your eyes on other institutions, but I would ask you to at least take a look at Christ College. It is a Reformed school that has the Bible as the center of its curriculum. We believe in applying the Christian worldview to all areas of life. We are distinctively Reformed. It's not something that we hold as an afterthought like many Reformed institutions. So if you're interested in an explicitly Reformed education, then I would encourage you to take a look at the literature and talk to Dr. Claussen or myself if you'd like further information. Well, let's recap where we've been so far. The first lecture, we talked about the nature of science. What is science? We saw that there was some difficulties in coming to terms with this. It cannot be defined from a neutral perspective. You just cannot talk about science without first talking about who it is that's defining it. One of the things that you'll learn whenever you approach a piece of literature or approach a topic is that it's important who is presenting the topic to you or who you're reading. A question that an intelligent student should ask when he's reading something is what kind of bees this author has in his bonnet. Where's he coming from? And when it comes to the issue of science or the nature of science, you cannot answer that in a vacuum. The one who answers the question is going to determine the answer ahead of time. His worldview is going to determine what the nature of science is. Now, the same is true for me, admittedly. I'm coming from a Christian Reformed perspective. And so my understanding of science, I should say our understanding of science, is going to be quite different from that of the secularist. Now, this shouldn't cause us concern. He's going to, of course, say what we're talking about is really not science at all, but we're going to return the favor. The way they define science, we're going to say, is not science at all. It's not genuine, true science. So there's a question of the nature of science itself. This is a fundamental debate. Science has such a grip on our culture. It holds so much of us. Mr. DeMar was talking about the influence of evolutionary thinking. Well, evolutionary thinking has great scientific credentials. All the leading biologists, molecular biologists, paleontologists, physicists even, and chemists, all the leading ones, with few exceptions, hold to some version of Darwinian evolution. And this is put forth in our culture, from the academic institutions to the literature to the media who are trained by these people to the judges that are trained by these people, and it makes its way out, and we feel it in our everyday life. Darwinism tells us that we have evolved from lower life forms, and we've seen that some of the moral implications that come out of that. We see the way that we stop that type of view in our culture is not simply to disagree as to the facts of the matter and debate whether evolution occurred by the basis of the fossil record or the basis of some other types of evidentiary considerations. The real debate is over the nature of science itself. What is science? And our contention is that Darwinism is not science. Darwinism, as Christianity, is a religion. And their view of science is religious as well. And so the debate is over worldviews. And so what is the nature of science? Well, your worldview is going to determine that. Now, some at this point may take a leap and say, well, therefore, it's all relative. It really depends upon your perspective. In this morning's lecture, we're going to talk about relativism in science, within science, but this is relativism in general. You know, one guy defines science one way, another guy defines science another way, and it's all a matter of your perspective. Well, there's some truth in that. There are different views as to what science is. It doesn't mean that we're left with the relativism. It doesn't mean we're left with throwing our hands up and saying, well, I just choose this way. It seems best to me. See, there is a way to decide whose view of science is correct. There's a way of determining which worldview can make sense of science. And tomorrow morning, we're going to argue that Christianity alone offers us a defense. Well, the same thing can be said about the scientific method. One scientific method, or the scientific method that's proffered, is based upon certain prejudices, certain naive prejudices, I might add, certain views as to the way in which science works. And there are some things about the traditional version of the scientific method that are okay, some things that were legitimate, but you see it was totally oversimplified, didn't take into account divergent considerations. Moreover, it involved different presuppositions that were left unexamined. They were just taken for granted. And it's our duty as people that are informed to understand what these presuppositions are and to test them to determine whether they are accurate. And so we're not going to simply take on the scientific method of the world, which, by the way, they don't even take on. It's a myth. Neither are we going to take on different versions of it, like Karl Popper's version. We're going to examine it by Scripture. Well, this morning we're going to look at the goal of science. What is science setting out to do? Now, there's going to be two parts to this lecture. One is the view that science, the nature of science in terms of its limitless goals. In other words, what does science do? What is it trying to attain? It tries to obtain, basically, knowledge of all things. This view is called scientism. So we're going to be examining scientism. And in the second part, I want to look at another aspect of the goals of science, and that is, what is science trying to do? Is it trying to give us truth about the world? Is it trying to discover something that is really the case? Are our theories, in other words, something that correspond to reality? And are the entities postulated in these theories, such as atoms and photons and things like that, are they really existent things? Or, as some have maintained, is science simply a rational process that gives us control over our environment, but we should not come to think of the theories of science as genuinely true? There's different versions of this position. Some who hold to this anti-realist stance, those that are against the view that science gives us a genuine description of the world, such as positivism. They think that the only thing a scientist should do is simply describe the phenomenon or say the phenomenon. And the theories they come with basically organize the phenomenon with certain type of mathematical equations. Or you have anti-realists that are of more of an anti-rationalist stripe, that think that there is no such thing as a description of the real world out there that is that science gives us, nor is there any rational canons to determine what science is and demarcate it from non-science. Science cannot be distinguished from other activities, for one, and secondly, when there's competing theories, there is no way of ultimately deciding which is the case. You see, there is no progress in science according to this view. Science may have helped us manipulate our environment, but science has not made any progress because there is no progress to be made. So we're going to look at the goal of science in that sense, but first we're going to look at a view that has been termed scientism. Scientism is the view that science, well, I'm going to give you two versions of it, but basically, scientism is the view that science is the be-all and end-all of human inquiry. And there's two versions of this. One is a strong version. And that is, only science gives us knowledge of the world. Science and science alone gives us knowledge of the world. There's no other discipline that gives us knowledge. If you study poetry, if you go and do research into history, for example, that really doesn't give you knowledge about the world unless you can provide canons of history to make it accord with science. You see, all those other forms of inquiry do not give you knowledge. Only science does. Religion is something that doesn't lead you into any truth. Science and science alone does. Now, throughout history, there's been those that have held this view implicitly, but one group of philosophers and scientists have held this view rather explicitly. Implicitly, I should say, even in modern times, though. There are many people that wouldn't articulate something so strongly, but when you scratch the surface a bit, they really hold to this view. They believe that science is it. If a proposition is not backed by some type of scientific methodology, then we should throw it away as either unknowable or untrue or something that's meaningless. Science alone gives us knowledge. Well, the school that has held this view most strongly is called the logical positivism. Logical positivists are a combination. The term combines two different ideas. Positivism, those of you that know 19th century philosophy a bit know of Auguste Comte, who was the founder of the school of positivism. He rejected the idea that science gives us truth about the real world, that science describes the way the world really is. All you have to do, according to Comte, is look at the world using scientific methods and describe the world and to formulate theories about the world, mathematical idealizations that save the phenomenon, that take into account all the phenomenon. But don't pretend that what your theories tell you really goes beyond into the real world. Your theories do not tell you about the way in which the world really operates. Science cannot do that. Science can only operate on a descriptive level. Science is not to get into causation. Now, a classic example of this is the Newtonian view of action at a distance. One of the questions that immediately came to mind to those that were opposed to the Newtonians was, how is that possible? You know, the Cartesian mechanistic view of the world was that motion was possible, change was possible, because there was no vacuums in nature. Everything reacted causally in terms of interaction. Think in terms of a billiard table. You have the different balls, and when one ball strikes another, the other ball moves. Well, in the Cartesian mechanistic system, you have all these balls aligned up together, and so you have these bangings and these motions that are causally linked to one another. And so when Newton came and said that there was action at a distance, this idea of gravity, they scorned it. How can that be? How can one body have any causal interaction with another body if there is nothing in between them to causally interact? There's no physical contact. Now, there's a great deal of debate about this, and how is it possible? It's a genuine question, isn't it? And to say, well, there's gravitational forces. Well, that's kind of like a dormant virtue, isn't it? Okay, I'd take my keys and drop them up here on the podium, and I say, how did that happen? I say, well, gravity. Oh, okay, we all nod, yes, that was gravity, yes. That doesn't explain anything, does it? What is gravity? What is it that causes this force? Now, the positivists would say, you're going beyond what science allows you to do. Science merely describes the world, so don't pretend that you can get beyond it. So that's the positivistic view, and we'll perhaps have a bit more to say about it in a little bit. Now, the logical side of this logical positivism idea is that logic, particularly first-order predicate logic, which was discovered in the late 19th century, which was the greatest advance in logic since Aristotle, this modern idea of logic was greatly influential in different types of philosophical movements, especially in semantics and theories of language. And so these philosophers were positivists who also were taken by the new logic that Frege and Bertrand Russell and others formulated. And so combining logic, this new powerful logic, and positivistic ideas, they came to a view that all knowledge comes through science or is formal in nature. It's logical in nature. Okay, logic doesn't really give us information about the world. It's just formal in nature. So the logical positivists came up with an idea that was very influential and still continues to be, although there's not many people that still adhere to it in its original form, but that is that principle called verificationism. Verificationism. Verificationism is the view that all propositions, only propositions that can be empirically verified or are matters of logic, only those propositions have meaning. Now notice it's not all those only those propositions are true or could be true. The thesis is a linguistic thesis. The only propositions that have meaning are those that can be empirically verified or those that are true by logic. And so the statements such as the cat is on the mat, that is a meaningful statement. You know, you have to clear up the indexicals and find out what the cat is and things like that. But once you determine that, then you can decide whether that statement is true or false. But it's meaningful whether it's true or false. But statements such as, I know that my Savior liveth, you see, the verificationists say that is without significance. There's no meaning to it. It's not that it's false. It's not that, well, when you say, I know that my Redeemer liveth, that statement is false. They say that that statement doesn't have any meaning. I might as well have said blah, 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 blah. Now, they will admit, they will say that, well, it may have some emotive meaning. You know, it might send goosebumps down your spine, perhaps. You know, if you read a good piece of poetry, it might affect you in some emotional way that you cannot describe completely rationally. They say that's what's going on when you read those types of things. Or when you read about certain types of supernaturalism, or certain types of entities that go beyond the data of our observations. Those types of things that cannot be empirically verified, those propositions that contain those things are meaningless. Now, the verificationists held in very strong form a view of scientism. The only way you can obtain knowledge is through science, the verifying. You go out, have your propositions, and you verify them. Now, there are some propositions that are meaningful that science cannot tell us whether they're true or not at this particular time. For example, this proposition, string theory, let me give you another one. Quarks are the smallest particle of matter. Now, they'd have a problem with the entity involved, but take that aside, and they would say that at this point in time, science does not give us does not have the skill, does not have the technology to tell us whether that is true or not. Perhaps one day. In principle, though, it is empirically verifiable. In principle, you can have some type of test. We might not be able to do it now, we might not think of it, but in principle it is testable. And science gives us the means to testing those things. And according to the logical positivists, what science is common sense gone self-conscious. Okay, science is basically common sense. And they define common sense in terms of empirical experience and observation. But it's common sense taken to greater degrees. And all that you know, from the cat is on the mat to Mercury is the closest planet to the sun, to whatever biological knowledge we have, all of those things are products of either pre-scientific thought, common sense, or science itself. And so science gives us knowledge of all things. Well, there's two problems with scientism. One I'm going to criticize specifically indexed to the logical positivists, and the other one is more global criticism. The logical positivists have a deep problem. There's a number of problems with logical positivism. As I said, there's no philosopher that I know of that still holds to it today, but still is very influential. But the problem is basically a problem of self-refutation. Okay? All knowledge comes through empirical experience, or only those propositions are meaningful which can be empirically verified. Now, if I tell you that it's a self-refuting proposition, what does that mean? It means it doesn't accord with itself, doesn't accord with its own standards. What kind of proposition is that? Is that an empirical proposition? Can you test it against the observations that you have? Can you observe verificationism? Well, verificationism isn't that type of thing, is it? Verificationism doesn't lend itself to verification, empirical verification. So You see, there's a self-refuting problem with it. Now, in a more global sense, this is true of scientism in general. Scientism says all knowledge comes through the scientific enterprise. A minor problem here is at this point is, well, what do they mean by science? But we'll give them that. We'll pretend we know what they mean by science. All knowledge comes through the scientific enterprise. Well, you have another problem, and if you're paying attention, you should see what that is immediately. It's also self-refuting, isn't it? All knowledge comes from the scientific enterprise. Did that knowledge, that all knowledge came from the scientific enterprise, did that knowledge come from science? Can science tell us that science gives us all knowledge? You see, science doesn't have that ability. Science cannot tell us what the limits of knowledge are. Science is a method to help us understand one aspect of reality. Now, the naturalist may say that's all of reality, but you see, the naturalist is a philosopher. He's taking a philosophical stance. He's saying that all that we can know is physical in nature or naturalistic in nature. But that's a philosophical position. So scientism, in the strong form, is self-refuting. Scientism just couldn't possibly be true. You couldn't know it to be true. You couldn't prove it. It is self-referentially problematic on the basis of itself. You cannot test scientism in terms of science. Now, there's a weak version. And the weak version of scientism is that in most scientists, probably hold to some version of this if they're self-conscious at all. Most scientists, and maybe most college-educated people, perhaps. Although people tend to be very hybrid in their thinking. And there's a lot of Christians going around thinking like naturalists when it comes to science, and there's a lot of non-Christians going around thinking like Christians when it comes to morality, right? So nobody is consistent completely, except our Lord and Savior, but there's degrees of errors in all of our thoughts. But especially with the non-believer, they are borrowing from our views all the time. But the more rational version of scientism is this weak one. Science is the best exemplar. It's the paradigm of rationality. So there might be other ways of acquiring knowledge about the world or about ourselves. There may be other methods to get us some types of knowledge. But science is the exemplar. That is the model that we hold out there. And other forms of knowledge, other methods of inquiry, have to, in some way, bow down before science. Well, the question that we may ask is, how do we know this? How do we know that science is the best example of rationality? Well, there are some arguments that can be put forward, and I'll try to put them in the best possible light. And by the way, one of the practices that we should be used to as young Christian scholars is always putting our opponent in the best possible light. We shouldn't erect straw men and beat those up. We should try to put our opponents in the best possible light, give them the strongest case possible. In fact, if you're doing your job correctly, sometimes you'll read opponents, non-Christians, that don't say things in the best possible way, or they don't make the best case for their argument. So we should help them out even. We should say, well, you shouldn't say it like this. Perhaps this would make your case stronger. We should try to make their case for them as best as we can. And then we refute that. So how do we know this? Well, one of the arguments that can be given is a historical argument. There's historical evidence, it seems, that would support this claim. The historical evidence seems to, in one understanding of it, seems to be that science has given us most of our knowledge. Now, this can be in a quantitative sense. Most of the knowledge that we have, quantitatively, has come from science. Now, let's say this is true for a moment. Let's say it is true that most of our knowledge has come from some type of scientific endeavor. Does that mean that science is the exemplar or paradigm of rationality? Well, an analogy will help us see that it is not necessarily the case. You see, rationalists, those that believe that the deliverances of reason, in the old version of it was clear and distinct ideas, classical Cartesian rationalism, clear and distinct ideas are what are the primary objects of knowledge. Now, many rationalists believe that you can acquire knowledge through sensory experience. In fact, many rationalists will acknowledge that most of our knowledge comes through observation of the world. But for the rationalist, it is the clear and distinct ideas which form the paradigm. Those are what are the exemplars of knowledge. Quantity doesn't matter. You might get other knowledge by other means, but your most precious knowledge, the most certain knowledge, the highest example of knowledge comes from the deliverances of reason. And so just because a method of inquiry happens to give us the most quantity of knowledge doesn't necessarily mean that it is the paradigm of rationality. Moreover, this idea that historical evidence shows that science has given us the most knowledge is question begging. See, this is a version of the magician with the rabbit already in the hat. Then he pulls it out. Well, if the rabbit's in the hat, what's the surprise, right? Okay, the rabbit's in the hat for those that are doing this type of historical investigation. They're looking at knowledge and they're picking out examples that science has given us. They're pre-selecting. They have a way of arranging things already that is going to determine the count. They're going to count things that qualify as knowledge to be scientific in nature. You see, if you did a historical inquiry as to where most of our knowledge comes from, you have to have some way of determining what is an example of knowledge. We look at the Christian religion. You look at the revelation that God has given us and the evolution of Christian doctrine. You see, from the church fathers on to the Reformation to our present day, although this is in a model period right now, but we know more about the Bible than the first century Christian. We have a better understanding in many ways if we avail ourselves of the resources to biblical teaching. We see there's a progression in the understanding of God's redemptive revelation. So there's progress in that. And so we see an accumulation of knowledge, and what we know now is greatly superior to what was known in the Middle Ages, for example. And so if you did a historical survey asking, well, where is our knowledge? Where does most of our knowledge come from? Not only do you have the repository of God's revelation, but you see this doctrinal development throughout church history. Huge quantities of knowledge has come out of this this research, let alone our God's revelation itself. And so if I were doing the counting, if you can count these sorts of things, I would say history doesn't show us that science gives us the most information, gives us the most knowledge. Revelation does, and the progression of the church's understanding of that revelation. And so it's question begging to defend this weaker thesis of scientism on the basis of the historical evidence. What counts as evidence is going to be determined by what you consider to be knowledge. And most people that hold this weaker version of scientism will not count revelation and will not count theology as knowledge. They'll say, yes, that's fine and good. That might be helpful in your personal life, but that's not knowledge. You don't know those things. Those are just mere beliefs. Those are things that you really hold to with religious conviction, but they're not pieces, objects of knowledge. You know, they would make a distinction between fact and opinion. The old canard is that facts are sacred, opinion is free. Science deals in the realm of fact. You deal in the realm of opinion. That is not knowledge. Well, there's a pragmatic defense of this weak version of scientism. And that is, science has given us so much useful technology compared to any other method of inquiry. Look what science has done for us. And we can certainly agree with this, can't we? Science certainly has given us lots of useful technology. I mean, my voice is being amplified right now. That wouldn't have been possible without the work of scientists a couple hundred years ago. Science has influenced all areas of our life. The technology that we take for granted today wasn't available a few hundred years ago. Science has certainly advanced and has given a great deal of benefit. You think about medical science. there are many people alive today, perhaps some in this room, that wouldn't have been alive 100 years ago if it were not for the development of medical science. And so science certainly has been useful. Science has given us a great deal of useful technology, unquestionable. The problem with this defense of the weak version of scientism, though, is that it assumes it's the only useful type of knowledge. Technology is the only useful type of knowledge. What about understanding Paul's doctrine of the Christian sanctification experience? What about the understanding of prayer and how it affects our life? Well, that's very useful. In fact, the Bible says that it's useful in all ways to us. And so how do we determine pragmatic value? Well, those that would defend a weak version of scientism will say, look, technology has given us all this. And I would turn them to the Bible and say, look what the Scriptures give us. Gives us, now, apart from the theoretical considerations of Scripture as being the foundation of science, just from a practical, spiritual view, a point of view, in a narrow sense, it has tremendous implications for us, tremendous practical value. I mean, what's more practical than God revealing to us the solution to our fundamental problem? And not only revealing it to us, but through the power of the Spirit working in, with His Word, regenerating us. What's more useful than that? What's more useful than leading a life of godliness, of helping others in self-sacrifice, of following the model of our Savior? What's more useful than obtaining the crown of glory in heaven? See, science can't claim anything like that. What's the comparison between that and the discovery or the invention of a light bulb? See, it's more useful to me to know Christ than it is to have the technology that science has bequeathed to us. It's great stuff. Science has given us many great things. But you see, this pragmatic defense begs the question as well. You see, those that would use this defense would obviously dismiss my considerations out of court. Yes, that's helpful for you. That might be beneficial for you. Behind that, of course, is, but it's not true. And moreover, it's not helpful for me. It's not helpful for other people. Science is helpful to everybody. You know, if you have cancer and you're given a treatment that can prolong your life, that is useful to whomever is the patient. But you're finding comfort in the Psalms when there is a discovery that someone you love has cancer. That's useful to you. That's not useful to other people. So that's what they would say about that. You see, they're begging the question. Their understanding of what is useful is determined by their worldview. Again, worldviews determine how one understands the evidence. Well, there's another issue, problem with this pragmatic defense. And that is, the utility of something does not guarantee its legitimacy. Somebody says, well, science has been the most useful way in which we have obtained knowledge. Therefore, it's the exemplar of knowledge. This pragmatic defense suffers from a problem that utility does not guarantee legitimacy. If it did, then the communist Soviet Union would be a legitimate form of government. Because if you look in terms of utility from the point of view of control of your society and of a crime-free society, the Soviet Union was much more effective than the government of the United States in controlling its citizens. There was much less crime in the Soviet Union than there was in the United States during the Cold War period. You see, communism has a very pragmatic justification. It works. If you want to control human behavior, this is a good form of government. But of course, we're not going to step into that type of reasoning, are we? Just because something works at a certain level doesn't mean it is legitimate. Just because science has given us useful ideas, useful knowledge, doesn't mean that it is the exemplar of rationality. It doesn't follow from the premises. There's a fundamental problem with scientism of either version, though. Its main judgment regarding the rationality of science is that it is the final authority. See, what's implicit in both versions of scientism is that science is the final authority. Science, in the strong case, in the strong version, science tells us all there is to know. In the weak version, it's the best exemplar of the way in which we obtain knowledge. In either case, it's viewed as a standard. Science sets the standard. But then we have to ask this question, right? Like Columbo, we have to keep probing. We have to keep asking the why question. What authority does the science make this determination by? By what standard? As Rushuni taught us to ask, or Van Til taught us to ask. What standard can they make this judgment by? On whose authority does science make these claims? Well, we've always seen that it can't be science itself, can it? Science itself cannot say, on my own authority. I am true, science is true, on my say-so. Because in almost any definition of science, science is limited to knowledge of the world that we, the knowledge of the world that we get through observation. Science doesn't go beyond that. Science has an experimental empiricist type of methodology. Science, by its own understanding, cannot go beyond that. And so science is not in a position to tell us that it has the final authority. You see, the question of final authority, the question of who justifies science, what justifies this view of science, lies outside the domain of science itself. Science cannot decree that it is the final standard. At least it can't do so with any type of coherency. Because if it says, I am the final, if science says it is the final standard, and science says that domain is only that which is empirical, then it's begging the question, first of all, and saying that the only things that can be known are empirical. But more fundamentally, it's making the determination beforehand upon itself that goes beyond what it's able to do. You see, science cannot tell us philosophical truth. Okay, science tells us truths about the world, at least some versions of science believe it does. Science cannot tell us that it is the only way of knowing. It cannot be its own authority. But there's something that we're getting onto that is going to be very important. And that is the issue of final authority. By what authority can we determine whether science is or is not the best exemplar of rationality? How do we determine whether science is true, is a method where all knowledge comes from or not? This becomes the question of a final authority. A final authority is an authority by which we judge all their claims, all other authorities, but it itself is not judged by other authorities. A final authority is an authority that judges all other authorities, but it itself is not judged by other authorities. We have an example of this throughout the Bible. Think of some of the titles of Jesus Christ. He is called the Lord of Lords, the King of Kings. See, what are kings? What are lords? Well, there are people that have authority. There are people that have authority over other people. But the Bible says of Jesus that he is the King of Kings. He is the authority over all other authorities. He is the Lord of all other lords. See, the Bible refers to Jesus, refers to God as the final authority. There's no other authority by which God himself is judged. Now, what's interesting at this point, I'm inserting Christianity, and in the discussion of science, they will say, well, you see, that's the problem with your religion. That's the problem with Christianity. It's not that there's something wrong about it per se. If it works for you, fine. But see, the problem is you're trying to put your Christianity out there in culture. You're trying to state that this is true. But you see, you're involving yourself in a really vain type of argument. You're saying that Jesus is Lord on the basis of his say-so. And how naive is that? You know, I could go around and do the same thing. I could say, I am the King of Kings. You wouldn't believe me on my say-so. Why do we believe Jesus on his say-so? Why do we believe the Bible on its say-so? And the retort that we're going to give them is that in the nature of the case, everybody, not just the Christian, everybody has a final authority. Everybody answers to somebody or to something, whether it's a non-animated principle or whether it's the true and living God. All people answer to some higher authority. Now, of course, all people are answerable to God in an ultimate sense, but people epistemologically in their way of thinking and justifying their knowledge claims, in their worldviews, all of them have their own final authority. You see, they would mock Christians for defending the Bible in terms of the Bible. But they do the same types of things. And when it comes to defending scientism, they're going to have to appeal to some final authority. Everybody has a final authority. Now, how do we know this? How do we know that it's not just the Christians that have a final authority? We know this because of the nature of knowledge itself. You see, as soon as you start asking why questions or how questions, how do you know, how do you know, how do you know, eventually somebody who espouses a worldview is going to stop at some point. We just know that. That is true. That is not questionable. They'll go so far and then they'll stop. When people ask us how we know things, how do you know that why do you say that the government should not legitimize homosexual marriages? I say, well, I think it's wrong. And the government should be based upon moral principles. Well, how do you know it is wrong? Well, then eventually, I'm going to go back to a biblical case. I'm going to justify my view on the basis of the Bible. That's my final authority. And if somebody pushes me farther, how do you know that's true? I'm going to say, on what authority do you know the Bible is true? I'm going to say on God's own authority. On God's own authority, I know that the Bible is true. Well, how do you know that that's God's book? Because God says, He's revealed that that's His book. You see, you've got a problem now, right? Seemingly, you're not going anywhere. He's pushed me back to my final stance, my final authority. God and Scripture is going to be where I eventually make my stand. And He's going to say, well, that's too bad. You know, I'm sorry that you're so irrational. I'm not irrational like that. I don't just go to a book and let that decide for me the truth of the world. I'm more rational than that. And you say, oh, you are, huh? Well, let's start asking him questions. How do you know this? How do you know what is good and evil? And then you start pushing them. And eventually, if you keep asking the why questions, they're going to end up at a certain place. They're going to say, thus far and no further. How do you know these things to be the case? One of the examples that Dr. Bonson used to like to give is the example of a population of, say, a Virginia Beach. How do you know, what is the population of Virginia Beach? Well, let's say it's 50,000. And you say to me, how do you know that? You know, you're from California, how do you know these things? Well, I was in the hotel room and I was looking at a guide to Virginia Beach in the local area, and it said in there that there are 50,000 residents. And being of a difficult nature, you say, well, why do you believe that? You know, maybe somebody just, as a joke, slipped that in your room and thought it'd be funny to mislead visitors as to the population, right? Maybe the people that put that together made a typographical mistake. Maybe they didn't count correctly. See, there's different possibilities. And so I show them, and say, I'm interested in this too. We're two weird people. I say, well, I'm going to do some research then. And I go and I find that it was based upon the local government, that they this was their number, and so it wasn't a fraud. And then you ask, okay, well, this is the way they count it. Okay, but that's what they say. Well, how do you know their account is accurate? And so I go and I interview the local magistrate, and I say, where did you come up with these numbers? And I say, well, we went to the federal government, these are census numbers. And then I say, so these are census numbers. Now, we know that census numbers are always legitimate, right? But pretending that they are for a minute, they're not in California, by the way. But pretending that they are, when we go to the government, and somebody asks, well, how do you know that's legitimate? So I go there and I ask them for their method. How do you know that your method is reliable? They say, well, we go out and do some statistical sampling. We have canvassers, and they go out, and by these mathematical equations, we determine what the populations of given areas are. And I come back to you and I say, here it is. Here's the reason why I believe that there's 50,000 residents in this area in Virginia Beach. And you say, well, how do you know that methodology is true? I said, well, fundamentally based upon counting. Basically, the method is 1, 2, 3, 4, enumeration. And I think I have you at that point. You say, why do you trust that type of method? Why do you trust? That method depends upon the reliability of your senses or somebody's senses. It depends upon you having a reliable mechanism of understanding the world through your sense perception. How do you know? Why do you rely on your sense perception? At that point, I might just say, an empiricist certainly would, I just do. Empirical perception is my rock bottom. I can go no further. That is the basis of all of our knowledge. Now, as a Christian, I'd go further. I'd say, well, I can justify that by the basis of God's revelation. He has given me certain, endowed me with certain abilities. He's endowed all of humans with certain abilities, to the most part. Sensory capacities, you know, rationality, the ability to guarantee what we see is typically corresponds with that which is in the world. You see, God guarantees, in many ways, our empirical understanding of the world. These medium-sized objects at optical, at optimal focal distance. I mean, when that type of setting, it's hard to go wrong. So God gives us the reason. The Bible gives us the reason to believe that. The empiricist is going to have a different reason. But nevertheless, he has a final authority. He is going to go so far and no farther. Answers have to stop somewhere. You cannot keep on asking the how or why questions forever. So what authority justifies this view of science? Well, it cannot be science itself. It certainly cannot be biblical Christianity. We don't hold to scientism. We don't believe it's the only way of knowing things. Nor do we believe it's the best way of knowing things, right? You can't go to a rationalist to justify science. The rationalist will say that clear and distinct ideas are the paradigm, not empirical observations. You see, science looks for its foundation in an epistemology called empiricism. Empiricism is the view that all of our knowledge, and it's a naive view of empiricism, but all of our knowledge somehow is judged by the tribunal of our sensory experience. All knowledge comes in through our 5 or 6, however you want to count it, senses. And if something cannot be empirically verified, then it is not knowledge. Now, this version doesn't say it's meaningless, it just says it's not knowledge. So, scientism relies upon empiricism to do its work. How do we know scientism is true? Well, it's based upon empiricism. Well, then the question is, and you have to modify scientism, right? It can't be the strong version in this case, because not all knowledge came from science. The knowledge that it was true came from an empirical thesis, right? So what about the status of this empirical thesis, this empiricist view of epistemology? How do we know that empiricism is true? Well, it's its own final authority. It goes that far and no further. The empiricist, or those that hold to a weaker version of scientism, is in the same epistemological boat as the Christian. See, the Christian says, I know what I know because God reveals it to me. Or somehow I'm extrapolating or based upon tethering it some way to revelation. All my knowledge in some way is related to God's revelation. The empiricist, and somebody asked me to justify that, to justify God's revelation, I cannot go beyond God. There's no authority higher than God. I cannot appeal to my deliverances of reason or historical evidence or from scientific investigation into the Shroud of Turin or anything like that. You see, if those things validated the Bible, they'd be more authoritative than the Bible. So I can only go that far. The empiricist is in the same boat. He can only go so far. Both of us have a final authority, and that final authority is self-attesting in nature. It attests to its own authority. It doesn't go outside of itself to commend itself, to judge itself. So everybody, including those who hold to scientism, have a final authority. And it's not science. In this case, it's empiricism. Well, I can't pass by this opportunity to undermine empiricism. Insofar as the weak version of scientism is based upon empiricism, it is weakly grounded. Because empiricism is false. It's not just an opinion. Empiricism could not be true. There's two reasons. Well, one is an epistemological problem, and that is empiricism says that all knowledge comes through sense experience. But empiricism, or those who hold to it, do not have the attribute of omniscience. We do not, at our current state, nor shall we ever, being finite creatures with finite time, have total knowledge. And if we do not have omniscience, we cannot say with any degree of certainty that all knowledge comes through sense experience. We're going beyond what we're legitimately allowed to go. We could say, possibly, that all knowledge so far has come from sense experience. I would dispute that, of course, but you could say that. That's not epistemologically problematic on its face, but to say that all knowledge at all times, everywhere, comes from empirical experience goes way beyond empirical experience at this time. But there's an even deeper problem with empiricism, and that is empiricism says all knowledge comes from a sense experience. We've seen this theme come up over and over again. Remember, Van Til used to teach us that when we do an internal critique of the unbeliever, ultimately he's going to undermine himself. His view is going to be contradictory. And we find here another self-refuting statement. All knowledge comes from sense experience. Did that knowledge come from sense experience? What type of things come from sense experience? Our knowledge of colored objects, our knowledge of the reproductive cycle of a tsetse fly, our knowledge of the internal combustion engine. Those come from empirical experiences, right? What about our knowledge of the proposition that all knowledge comes through empirical experience? You see, that's not the type of thing that lends itself to empirical experience, is it? I've come across podiums of certain colors. I've come across internal combustion engines. Thank the Lord I haven't come across the tsetse fly yet. But I can come across that in principle. But what I have never come across, nor shall, is the principle of empiricism. It's something I will never find because it is not that type of thing. It has a different status. It's not open to empirical investigation. You see, empiricism is self-refuting. Empiricism undermines itself. All knowledge comes through sense experience. Ah, but that didn't come from sense experience. Okay, well, just grant me this one thing and then the rest is okay. No, we're not going to grant you one thing. That is a self-refuting proposition. And so insofar as scientism is grounded in empiricism, which we're trying to give it the best foot forward, insofar as justified by empiricism, it is illy grounded. It's undermined by a faulty epistemological theory. And so scientism turns out to be indefensible on the various grounds that it holds. The strong version is indefensible, incoherent. The weak version is indefensible. And so this idea of the goal of science, what is the goal of science? Well, the goal of science is unlimited. Science gives us all knowledge, or at least it is the exemplar of knowledge. We've seen that it cannot pass inspection. When we do a critique of it, it is not able to hold up. And so the goal of science, whatever it is, isn't to give us knowledge of everything. That is not the goal of science. Though most scientists and many influenced by science have an implicit, fixed belief that science and science alone gives us knowledge. And we see here that this tiger going around causing Christians to tremble because of its pronouncements. One after another, it seems some of our most precious doctrines are being attacked. Time after time again, homosexuality, evolution, origins, all these types of things are undermining the Christian principle under the name of science. Science gives us all this knowledge, but you see, it cannot. That is not the goal of science. Science cannot give us limitless knowledge. Very briefly then, what is the aim of science? Is the aim of science truth? Well, the realists say that science does aim at truth. What a scientist does, what the scientific method does, is give us a picture of the world, theories about the world, and when these theories are mature, when they've been tested over and over again and developed over time, and shown to be unable to be disproven, that those theories are true or at least approximately true. In other words, the theories of science correspond to the way in which the world is. And the entities that our scientific theories postulate have real objects in the world that they refer to. So when we talk about the Bohr atom, a realist will say that the Bohr model of the atom is true, or at least it's approximately true. We know it's not literally true. We've gone beyond the Bohr model. But we know that there are electrons spinning around a nucleus composed of a proton and, in many cases, a neutron. Again, that model that Bohr came up with still is held in a great deal modifications, is still held today. And the realists will say there is such a thing as a photon and an electron and a proton. So theories are true. The entities they postulate and the processes they postulate are true. And then finally, the thesis of the realist is that science aims at a true description of the world. So what is the goal of science? A true description of the physical world. Now, there are other competitors to this. There are other views of science that deny that science aims at truth. There are some that say that science only aims at organizing the phenomenon, the positivists, for example. There are others that say science does not do that type of thing at all. Science is simply a communal activity that certain communities engage in with certain questions and problems and processes, but there is no progress in science whatsoever. Science is not only not give us a true description of the world, science is even a rational practice. Now, these different theories of science, the goals of science, are very important for understanding science itself. Where should we be in this debate? Tomorrow morning, we're going to look at this. We're going to look at what is our approach to science as Christians. Does science give us a true description of the world? Or is it just of instrumental value? Or is it a non-rational process that really cannot be seen as giving us any progress in knowledge at all? In other words, it's irrational. We'll look at that and try to determine what is the case, and then we'll look at what are the foundations of science, the presuppositions of science, and the conclusion will be only Christianity can provide the preconditions for our scientific endeavors. Thank you.